The Zone is presented by Guaranteed Foods, delivering all-natural food to Midwestern families since 1958. Enjoy healthier food, more free time, free delivery, and better value. Go to GuaranteedFoods.com.
All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you, Dylan Michaels. We head up until 2 o'clock. We will talk some Royals baseball coming up in the noon hour. We'll hear from J.J. Piccolo. He will talk today, press conference, getting ready for opening day. And we'll hear from Matt Quattro as well. We got Sports or Leisure, 1 o'clock. Sterling Holmes will hang out with us. It's presented by Johnny's Tavern. Right now, let's talk some Chiefs football, some NFL football. Kent Swanson, KCSN.substack.com, the KC Laboratory Podcast, KC Sports Network's Kent Swanson. Kent, welcome to the show. How are you, sir?
I am doing fantastic. A happy opening day to both of you. I'm really excited about this. It's going to be a great day.
Yeah, I am pumped as well. We'll get your Royals prediction and wins at the end of the segment here, just to see where you're at and your feel on this particular Royals team. But let's talk some rugby. Want to do that? Let's discuss some some rugby, some mainly rugby that's played, I don't know, in Wales. If I'm just throwing a spitballing here, just throwing a dart. The Royals, the Chiefs sign Luis Rhys-Zamet, 6'3", 209, a 4'4", 340. Kent, all jokes aside, you know, we had a joke with it, and then we had a serious, commentary in the first segment as well. But what do you think of this signing? He had multiple workouts with teams, and he decided after the workout with the Chiefs signed him.
Yeah, I think it's a fun story. I think it's, I don't have a ton of high expectations for him as a player. If you look at his athletic profile, obviously the 40 time stands out. But if you look at some of the other metrics around his profile, it kind of is pretty average, 29-inch vertical. So, that's not particularly great. But I think it's interesting to get him into the building. I think it's interesting to have a rugby style player, have to maybe help teach some of these guys how to tackle a little bit, and we'll see what happens. But I don't have a ton of optimism that this is going to be a big needle mover from I don't know if it's going to work out great as far as him making the 53-man roster, but I am at least interested. It'll be fun.
Yeah, we'll see what happens, and if he doesn't make it, he doesn't make it. Came in earlier and said, well, if he can just get there and teach people how to tackle without the hip drop, hey, great. Because rugby banned a hip drop tackle last year. So, he's been dealing with it, Kent. That's the secret weapon. They banned the hip drop tackle. Now the Chiefs go and sign a rugby player? Come on. I mean, what other connection is there?
They have a tackling consultant there for the entirety of the season at minimum. I mean, and that might be the best value that he provides. But don't get me wrong, I'm still excited to see what happens. But I'm not overly optimistic that we're gonna see him play a role in Kansas City this year.
I am. I'm with you on that. We know who will not play a role in Kansas City this year is L'Jarius Sneed. Kent, curious your reaction. It came out on Saturday, and the last time we talked, we were discussing the possibility of what the options are for L'Jarius, and traded for a third rounder in 2025 and exchanging seventh round picks. What do you think of the compensation and the Chiefs' decision to move on from Sneed and also create the cap space and open that up?
So we did a live reaction show on KC Sports Network, breaking news team head up by Tucker D. Franklin. Mm-hmm. I don't think L'Jarius Sneed was ever actually in the plans for the Chiefs in 2024. That's what I think. And I think all the signs that we've seen from the last month point exactly to that. They go out very quickly to announce that they are allowing L'Jarius Sneed to go out and seek a trade. They are doing it at the NFL Combine. They are trying to give themselves ample time to get L'Jarius Sneed in a situation where he's going to get paid and the Chiefs can get some level of compensation. So I think they've been going, I think they've always been very intent on just trying to move on from him, but trying to get assets maybe better than a potential for a compensatory pick. And, maybe just kind of, ensuring that they're going to get some draft capital removed from having to navigate that formula period. And so from that lens, like if you look at how they've operated, I know they said, yeah, maybe he'll play on the tag. With what, I mean, if he plays on the tag, this team has to restructure a Joe Tooney or restructure a Jawan Taylor to give themselves any ability to make any moves beyond Hollywood Brown. Mm-hmm. So I don't think any of the actions that they showed really indicated that they were ever going to keep L'Jarius Sneed. I think they wanted to move on from him. They wanted to do right by him and get him a good deal, but they also wanted to find a way to receive some compensation. So from that lens, they did fine on the compensation side. I'm not excited about it, but I just, if you were never really going to be keeping L'Jarius Sneed, which I still don't believe was the case, then you got more compensation than you would have if you had tried to play the compensatory formula game.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And even if you've got the if you played the compensatory formula game, it was the between the third and the fourth round. So no matter, even if the Titans win the Super Bowl, it's still a better third round pick than what you would have got as a comp pick for L'Jarius Sneed. So I like it as well. They've opened up some space, and you know we talked with your colleague Craig Stout, and he had a great write up on the historical precedent of trading cornerbacks and what is realistic. And the conclusion I took from that is a second rounder probably isn't all that realistic. It'd be amazing if they got a second rounder, but it felt like Kent, to get a second rounder, they needed a bidding war, right? If they were going to get that, if they were going to get top end of the market for L'Jarius Sneed, they needed a couple of teams that felt like he's the final piece and will do what it takes to get this guy. Like, you know, Rasul Douglas got a third and a fifth last year, because it was in the middle of the season, and it was, we've got all these injuries, we got to keep this thing together. Hey, Buffalo, we got a chance to do something here. Let's go out, and it's okay to do this. We'll cross that bridge when we get to it. Offseason a little bit different, but they needed a bidding war if they really would have got a second rounder, right?
That, yes, and I mean, even if you look at the context of a Rasul Douglas, you know, the Bills were getting good value in trading for a Rasul Douglas because the contract responsibilities for the Bills was going to be relatively light.
Great.
And so there's, that's taken into consideration too. Same with, you know, like we talk about Carlton Davis. It's the same kind of thing. Like people are talking about the compensation for Carlton Davis and how the Chiefs weren't able to get that for him. Well, it's the same thing because because Tampa has, you know, paid out some signing bonuses. It's going to be an effective contract for the Detroit Lions. So, you know, I think you have to look at it, you know, with all those pieces of context. Mm-hmm. Also, like, I think we have these unrealistic expectations. Like, it's a great point with what Craig wrote about, and it all played out. But the Chiefs have been involved in three of the last seven tag and trades in the National Football League since 2019. So I think we have this unrealistic perception of what happens in these.
Yeah.
And the Chiefs were also one of the last teams to really pay out a significant, you know, draft capital in one of these tag and trade situations too, with the Frank Clark situation. I mean, they paid for Frank Clark. So, I mean, taking all those things into consideration, I don't know. I maybe we had some unrealistic expectations across the board. And yeah, it was a little bit underwhelming that it's, you know, a future asset, but I think it means that Brett Veach has a chance to be aggressive here in the next couple of years.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. And I think, it also goes back, I compare it a little bit to a Major League Baseball farm system, that, you know, other teams don't value your prospects the way that you do. And the way that, you know, we would look at L'Jarius Sneed and what he means, and it's like there's no way you can give up and get less than a second rounder for what L'Jarius Sneed does and look how he is. And then the market says, no, because of the contract obligation, as you put it. It's a great way to phrase it, with the contract obligation for the Bills and Rasul Douglas and the contract obligation with Carlton Davis, versus the contract obligation with L'Jarius Sneed. And we know, being, you know, one of the top annual average value cornerbacks and the fourth highest in guaranteed money of cornerbacks in NFL history is L'Jarius Sneed now. Which, by the way, is a quick aside. L'Jarius Sneed at that price, like, I wouldn't be in favor of the Chiefs doing it. Even if somebody was like, hey, sign L'Jarius Sneed to a long-term deal, if that was the market, I'm sorry, I'm out. I don't need to be paying him as a 30-year-old, still a pretty decent amount and a sizable chunk against the cap, you know, some $20 million, you know, mid-20s against the cap as a 30-year-old cornerback that already as a 27-year-old has some knee issues. No, thank you, I'm out.
Well, and I think you need to trust that the Chiefs, you know what they're doing. They know the L'Jarius Sneed situation better than anybody in the NFL. And I think if you operate under the opinion that the Chiefs were never going to pay L'Jarius Sneed, then they probably have reason to not. And that reason probably is tied to the medical and the risk for the medical. On top of, you know, like I think you're about to see, like I know the Chiefs just got done paying a defensive tackle over the age of 30. So, like, I know this is going to sound, you know, a little bit counter to what I'm about to say, but I think there is a wave of players that the Chiefs really do want to sign and extend, and it's those players that they drafted at ages 21 and 22. You know, this team seems to really value age as a significant benchmark in their decision-making process. Obviously, they make some exceptions to blue chips like a Chris Jones, like if they feel they're getting a Hall of Famer, like a Mike Evans, maybe they'll make an exception. But I think this wave of players that are going to be 24 and 25 on their second deal with the Chiefs are the ones that they really want to pay deep down. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, like I think all the making sure that they can be flexible to do those rather than pay Legarius Sneed, knowing his injury history and all that, I think that tells you what you need to know.
Who do you prioritize? Kent Swanson's our guest. Then who would you prioritize if it's, okay, let's look at some of these guys that are, you know, coming up free agents going into the last year of their rookie deals. Who do you prioritize? The three names that have been thrown out there, Creed Humphrey, Trey Smith, Nick Bolton, maybe it's that order, but who are you prioritizing to, and maybe it's somebody else, to extend if you're the Chiefs and you've got this money and it's a strategy and an avenue you want to go down?
So I would prioritize Creed Humphrey first and foremost. I think that's the guy that I would be most intent on keeping. I think he's been a very, very good player. I know people are frustrated with the snaps, but you know, there's also some reports coming out that maybe he was playing with an injured hand for a large chunk of the season. I think he's the guy I would pay first. I know the Chiefs, I'm very confident the Chiefs will pay Nick Bolton. I'd extend Nick Bolton to an extent. I'm curious what the dollar amount ultimately is. I'd feel comfortable, you know, extending Nick Bolton because There's a weird shortage at linebacker in the National Football League. Like, the position is a little bit, I don't want to say in crisis, but it's just kind of a position that continually got, you know, devalued, and there's not a ton of good linebackers in the NFL. So, you know, I don't want to pay Nick Bolton Roquan Smith money because I think that would be a big mistake. But, you know, a Matt Milano-type contract for a Nick Bolton, I think that's a deal I'd try to do to extend Nick Bolton.
Yeah, and we'll see what, you know, maybe his expectation is of, you know, what he'll get on the open market as opposed to, you know, signing an extension. I'm with you on Creed Humphrey, and the Creed Humphrey thing is interesting, and maybe he was playing with an injured hand, and hey, if that's the case, then, you know, get those snaps figured out. The Chiefs have not gone the route of paying for a center. You know, they have Rodney Hudson and they move on. They draft Mitch Morse and they move on. Austin Ryder for a couple of years to fill the gap, they move on. Creed Humphrey, and I wonder if they go down the route of Creed Humphrey, and maybe this would put a sour taste in Creed Humphrey and his representative's mouth. But if you get on the route of Creed Humphrey and you extend him right now, and let's say you pay him top of the market center money and you give him $15 million annual average value. I mean, open to moving him to guard at that point and drafting another center, because $15 million might be the highest paid center. It's the 12th highest paid guard in today's market. I mean, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if you're paying Creed Humphrey, extending him as a center, and maybe the plan is in a couple of years you slide him over to guard and you draft a new center and you go the same route the Chiefs have gone in just drafting different centers and finding other guys to sort of fill that role. Or do you think this is the Brett Veach never they don't spend resources on cornerbacks. It's just not what they do. And then they spend a first round. Is it like that, to where the situations and circumstances dictated them moving on from Hudson and Mitch Morse and Austin Ryder to Creed Humphrey, and they'll stay with Creed as a center moving forward and pay him?
So a couple things here. With regard to moving Creed Humphrey to guard, I don't think there's a guarantee that Creed Humphrey is as good of a guard as he is a center. And I know that sounds crazy to say. It's an interior offensive lineman. We clump these guys in together all the time. I'm not going to overreact to what Creed Humphrey did when he was playing guard in week 18 of the season, but it did not look nearly as comfortable as he does at center.
Yeah.
There are some players along the interior that do better with the ball in their hand. and they are able, you know, their ability to anticipate the snap, use that initial quickness to help create good body positioning for themselves. Some guys do need to have the ball in their hand to be the best version of themselves. I'm not sure Creed Humphrey is not one of those. Now, as in regard to what the Chiefs have done at the center position in the recent memory, I think the thing that we have to take into consideration are two things. The Chiefs don't want to get caught in a situation with their offensive line not having enough resources, not having enough quality depth and enough quality players. So they've been very intentional about building that offensive line, maintaining a good offensive line. The Chiefs are potentially at a situation in 2025 where their entire interior of their offensive line is gone. Mm-hmm. And we don't really know what the tackle situation is going to be yet for them in 2025 either. Really, right now, the only player that is guaranteed to be there would be a Jawan Taylor. So I just think with the amount of influx that this team is going to have on their offensive line in 2025, one, you've got to prioritize it now in the draft in 2024, be it a tackle, be it a guard, honestly, in the top 100 picks. But you've probably got to at least make sure you're keeping one of those players. And, you know, if you draft a left tackle cheap, you have a little bit more flexibility when you look at the roster construction, the contract table for the entirety of your offensive line. You've got some flexibility because you're paying your left tackle cheap.
Yeah, I do wonder, too, like, you know, that it's always looking ahead, right? Always trying to figure out what the next year is going to look like and the next year is going to look like. And if you're, you know, coming into a final year of, you know, a Trey Smith and a Creed Humphrey, which is crazy to think about already, that's what's going on with this Chiefs team. If your plan is to extend Creed Humphrey and maybe even Nick Bolton with the price of guards now, should the Chiefs be open to, if on draft day somebody calls and would like Trey Smith, it sounds like, you know, blasphemous because of how good he is and how much he's liked. But with the price of guards now, should they be willing to find be open to trading Trey Smith on a draft night or before if he's somebody that they feel like they won't be able to extend anyway? And with the price of guards, they can't be paying two guards and a center that much money and a right tackle as well, depending on how they replenish it. Do you think they'd be open to that? And is that part of the strategy or smart strategy to be ahead of the game instead of letting Trey Smith walk at the end of this year?
I think the guard market's a little bit inflated, and I saw someone say that, and I think this is a great point, and I think it ties to some of the running back conversation, you know, contracts we saw and some of the, some of the interior offensive line. Those guys, the reason they got paid is because those are the players and the potential blue chip players that are actually hitting the open market, right? So there is a market of teams willing to pay big money to guards, and it's the teams that have a lot of cap space that they need to use, and they're looking at quality blue chip players that are actually hitting the market and available just happen to be the interior offensive line. That's why Robert Hunt got a 5-year, $100 million contract. I think it's a little bit of an inflated market in a weird market where teams aren't valuing the position, but there are teams still willing to pay for the position when they have the opportunity to, because they're just trying to stack blue chip players on their roster. So I don't think Trey Smith is getting you more than an early day three pick. And I think Trey Smith is worth more to the Chiefs in 2024 than an early day three pick. You could make the argument, yeah, that maybe they'll, you know, maybe they could draft a capable guard at, you know, in the fourth round. But I think I'd rather just the team continue to maintain that continuity on the offensive line, especially if they are trying to break in a new tackle. If you've got four experienced offensive linemen set up, good chemistry, and you're just integrating Kingsley Suamataya out of BYU, who gets picked 32nd by the Chiefs, then you're in good spot to help support that left tackle and have a good offensive line protecting Patrick Mahomes. I don't think I'd want to play with it.
Yeah. Kinswell, and I'm not saying to do that either. I just, you know, they're in a position now where they're looking at Legarius, and I'm glad they didn't trade Legarius Need last year because we might not be talking about another Super Bowl. We probably aren't talking about another Super Bowl for the Chiefs if they were working a year ahead every time. But, of course, shut down corner and guard being, you know, a different beast, a different animal. You know, this is Kent Swanson's our guest. The cap space that they have you know, 20-some-odd million dollars. They've got to give some of that to the draft class. They got to keep the lights on when the season starts, so they got to have money left over there. But if they go and spend money that is not extending some of these players, correct me if I'm wrong, is Hollywood the only new free agent that they've brought in instead, as opposed to just signing, re-signing everybody else? The other moves they've made have just been Turk and Nadi and Tranquil and Deion Bush, bringing in Hollywood Brown. Is there another free agent that I'm missing that they brought in? And will they look more to that, or will it be Mike Dana, Donovan Smith, that they'll go out and bring back and be a part of the, quote, free agent class?
Yeah, I don't think that they've made any major additions outside. I think it is Hollywood Brown. I'm trying to remember.
Me too. Everything else has been re-signing guys.
I think it's largely keeping the band together. I think there's still positions that the Chiefs could address that makes some sense. You know, I think they could go out. I think, you know, a veteran running back makes a lot of sense. I think, you know, a veteran defensive lineman somewhere on there, you know, an edge makes some sense. Even adding another receiver, like the pickings are getting slim, but I could see them going in and adding another receiver too. So, you know, and then you got to figure the left tackle situation out.
Yeah.
You know, Donovan Smith, is that the guy that they ultimately just go back to? They go back to the well there. They're kind of holding off on that until after the draft. You know, Mike Dana is, you know, are they bringing some of those guys back? I still think there's moves that this team needs to make to solidify their roster. And maybe it is just kind of keeping the band together and, you know, losing a few of the pieces from 2024 or 2023 and then hoping to get better from, you know, Hollywood Brown in the draft. But I don't think this roster is complete. They still need to add veterans at a couple of those key positions to help them kind of finalize the, you know, finishing touches on this roster.
Irv Smith, there it is.
Oh, man. How can we forget
Irv Smith? Yeah. But it is interesting. Those are the two, Hollywood Brown and Irv Smith, those are the two free agent acquisitions that they signed, not re-signed, right? Or franchise tagged, but then ultimately traded, as we know, with L'Jarius Sneed. But yeah, Irv Smith and Hollywood Brown, I'm guessing they'll have to go and find other players to come in that were on different teams, but we'll find out. Kent Swanson, KCSN.substack.com, the KC Laboratory Podcast. What do you think of the new kickoff rule, and does it benefit the Chiefs? Does it hurt the Chiefs? I know Dave Tobe is already in the laboratory and is pumped about it, and he was on the Buddy Listen podcast with Anthony Sherman and Garrick Dieter. That hasn't been released yet, so I'm looking forward to listening to Dave Tobe. Tried to get Dave Tobe on the show, but that's fine. Apparently he's already in the laboratory. What do you think of the kickoff rule?
I mean, I don't have, like, super strong opinions on it.
What?
I think I know, right? I do have opinions, though. I just, like, I'm not going to, like, be too entrenched in them, I guess, is the best way I can say it. I don't know. I don't love it just because, I mean, that's another variable that gets introduced. It's a big change in how things operate. And I don't know if I really want anything that kind of takes away, not that it takes the value of Patrick Mahomes away at all or anything like that, but I don't want a variable related to, to helping potentially level the playing field with a return for a touchdown getting in the way of, you know, how the game is operating. You know, the Chiefs have Patrick Mahomes. The rest of the National Football League doesn't. This rule could potentially create some more variability in the return game, a situation where points can be scored really without Patrick Mahomes' impact being felt whatsoever in a play. And I just, you know, I think if you're sitting here as the Chief, like, I know Dave Tobe's excited about it because job security, I guess, you know, like, hey, now we have to really scheme some things up. This gets even more important and all that stuff. But, man, I don't really want to try to value special teams more, you know, in a world where Patrick Mahomes is my quarterback and the rest of the league doesn't have him.
I threw out a name yesterday. See what you think. Cordarrelle Patterson was signed by the Steelers. You know, that's a running back. The Chiefs certainly could use a running back. I would love the Chiefs to go out and sign Jamal Agnew. They can throw him into the wide receiver room. They can use him as a gadget player if need be. But if kickoffs are going to be that big a part of the game moving forward, then you've added a value to it. And go out and get a guy that's averaged, you know, 26 yards per kickoff return the last couple of years for Jacksonville, one of the best out there, and also can fill in and fit in your wide receiver room. And if you want to have a guy run some gadget plays and things like that that they wanted from Kadarius Toney or whoever, then he can fill that role. I don't know how much it would cost, but I'm in favor of the Chiefs going out and getting Jamal Agnew if we're serious about the kickoff rule being a big deal now.
There's also a Deonte Hardy out there.
Yeah, yep, that would work.
From played at Buffalo.
Buffalo.
You know, hey, this is where our rugby, you know, our Louis Reese Zammit could get involved. You know, Laviska Shenault with being a big, dense, powerful guy.
Yeah,
maybe
true.
Maybe there's a role. Hey, there's a few guys out here that, you know, maybe it, let's, you know, revitalize Jakeem Grant's career.
Yeah,
you know, there's a few of these return guys. So now we've just placed an increased value in the return game.
Yeah,
another variable that doesn't involve Patrick Mahomes. That's all. Yeah.
No, it's
but,
absolutely
hey,
true.
There's fun players.
It's
fun
absolutely players. Absolutely true. Dave Toe, by the way, even though it's not released yet, Garrigan and Sherm said that Dave Toe is already thinking of ways to not have Butker on the field, that have somebody else kicking it and then going out and fielding it, because you don't need to just boot it through the end zone now. In fact, it's disadvantageous to kick it through the end zone. So have somebody else that can just get it to the 20 and then go down and cover, or, you know, different spin on the ball or whatever. Those are the things he's looking at. So it may not be Harrison Butker kicking off anymore for the Chiefs. We'll just see how many different strategies go into this whole thing. So We'll find out. But Deonte Hardy's not a bad name either to bring in if you're looking at this being an increased. I don't know. I don't get excited by it. It's like, oh, Kadarius Toney's on the field now. Yeah. Sweet.
Yay.
All right.
Yes. I don't know if we're going to have that problem, Jason.
Yeah. I'm okay with not having that problem. I'll be honest with you. Or he'll just be he'll be injured. He'll have that hip problem that'll go into week one and week two and week three, and we can see some more IG live updates from Kadarius. Kent Swanson, tell everybody how to get the draft guide. What are we, a week away from this thing coming out?
So yeah, a little bit over a week away from the draft guide releasing. It's a very exciting time for us here at KC Sports Network. We have 300 plus pages of Chiefs specific draft content. You got 225 more than 225 write-ups on prospects and how they fit the Chiefs specifically. This is a book entirely devoted to the NFL draft in the lens of the Kansas City Chiefs. And you can go find links to that on my social at Kent_Swanson. If you want to go to gum.co/KCSN24, that will get you a link to the guide as well. You get 3 months of KCSN Substack for free when you purchase or pre-order the book. So,
nice. You
know, hey, you get to all the breakdowns of any of the eventual Chiefs signings. And whenever they draft all these players, we're going to have breakdowns of those players on the KCSN Substack as well. So,
I love it. It's one of the main resources that I use for the draft is the draft guide. Last one, what are the Royals record this year? What are they?
79-83.
I love it. 79-83. There we go. Kent Swanson, KCSN.substack.com, the KC Laboratory Podcast, and the Breaking News Team, and KC Sports Network. Kent, you're the man. Appreciate it as always, brother. Looking forward to the draft guide coming out next week.
Yeah, I can't wait either.
Absolutely, man. I bet you can. There's Kent Swanson. The hours that are probably put in, not probably, that we know, the hours that are put in to produce that draft guide is unbelievable. There are two resources that I use for the draft. It is the KCSN draft guide is the first one I go to, and then the Beast at the Athletic that I go to as well. Those are the two. And I'll tell you that if the KCSN guys say, well, you're using ours along with the Beast, that would be a compliment to them, because that's how much I trust and respect the guys there and the write-ups and everything. And again, the Beast is just overall the draft guide The draft guide at KCSN has a specific Chiefs slant to it in the this is how the player fits with the Chiefs. What Steve Spagnuolo wants, what Joe Colan wants, what Andy Reid wants, what Andy Heck wants, what the wide receivers are like, what Brett Veach typically has, how Dave Merritt coaches, those specific traits of the Chiefs, what they would be looking for, and how it fits in, along with an overall write-up of pros and cons and overviews and things like that. And they have their rankings of, you know, what they think, these players, what the ranking, what they are. So it's a really cool deal, the draft guide. And how about that? If you are not already a subscriber to the Substack for KCSN, you get 3 months free with the draft guide. It is a fantastic resource. We'll take a time out. We'll come back, continue rolling, and we'll hear from John Sherman talking about some of the changes to the stadium roughly 5 days before the vote. We'll take a time out. Come back. More Zone next. All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you, Dylan Michaels. Thank you to Kent Swanson joining us, talking some Kansas City Chiefs. I was looking through the 810 Bracket Challenge, just sort of looking at the leaders and the group, the zone group. And I know my bracket sucks. And I let people know that last place was already occupied. If you were joining the zone group, do not think about finishing in last place, because I already got that, okay? Do not even think about that. I'm not in last place. I was just joking. You idiots think that I'm in last place? Of course not. I'm not in last place. I am in 374th place, you idiots, out of 398. Take that! Y'all thought I was going to be in last. You fools. Idiots. In the overall big challenge, and it sucks because I went and checked with HR. We are eligible for all the prizes. Now, I just realized that. Now, I would have totally put a good bracket in there. Maybe we aren't. I'm not sure. The overall bracket challenge, I am in place 4,317th. Just an hour. Just in the 8-10 bracket challenge. That's not like, you know, hey, at ESPN, I have 4,000. No, at ESPN, I'm probably like, you know, 7 million deep. 4,317 is my rank. My son's rank is in the 1,500s.
That's so, better than me. I'm 2,800.
2,800? So
5, to be exact. So
my son's ranked 1,532nd. There have been, what, 48 games that have been played? I got 27 correct. I didn't go chalk. I went upsets.
See, I did, and I only have three more correct. Oh. So it's, there's no way to.
You just got
to
go right chalk, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I like. I went upsets. I just didn't go right upsets. You know, I've already lost two Final Four teams, so it ain't going to get better, you know, moving forward. You know, the Sweet 16 games, I can win both games in the East, so I can get those right. I can get the South Sweet 16 game with Houston, right? But I've got Kentucky beating Marquette. That's not going to happen. Kentucky will not beat Marquette. I guarantee it tomorrow night. Zero chance of that happening. I've got Purdue beating Samford and Tennessee beating Creighton. So I can do, well, I still got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I've got 6 of my Elite Eight left, baby. And my national championship winner. I'm right back in this. I am not right back in this at all. But we'll have the basketball for you right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, as we do each and every year. College basketball and the NCAA tournament presented by Xfinity, Greenlight Dispensary, Hollywood Casino, and Trailside RV. Should let you know the bracket contest brought to you by Mr. Davis, Dewey's Pizza, Truity Credit Union, and Greengrass Cattle Company. So in the previous hour, we played the clip from John Sherman in talking about Oak Street and wanting that to still be open, and they will figure out a way to keep Oak Street open. John Sherman was asked, how does leaving Oak Open change the design plan for the ballpark?
You know, it doesn't really change much about the stadium. You know, that's simply about keeping Oak Street open. You know, if we, you know, we listen to the community, we listen to the mayor, the city council, certainly the people in the Crossroads Community Association. And it became clear to us that, you know, that was important that that stay open as a north-south artery. You know, it's a key part of the neighborhood, both for car traffic, pedestrian, and bicycles. So we basically just agreed that that would stay open. It does not really modify much of our stadium. Won't change anything about fixed seating, attendance. It's just that it keeps that artery open where it would have been closed, you know, to locusts.
I am fascinated to see how the renderings in the stadium, as it is currently set up to look downtown between Grand and Locust, between 15th and 17th, that swath of area is where the stadium and the ballpark district, entertainment district, yes, no, ballpark district, whatever. We'll get into the entertainment district thing and the Crossroads location. But if you haven't seen the renderings, picture Oak Street running north-south through right field. It's like the southbound lanes of Oak Street are in the grass. The northbound lanes of Oak Street is the warning track in right field. I'm not sure how that doesn't change, unless you're going to take every seat away from right field. Is it going to be like San Francisco, where you have this huge wall and you have a place where people can stand and watch the game, and then over that is hitting the ball onto Oak Street, or hitting the ball and hitting like a hotel across Oak Street or whatever, you know, just crushing it, that people aren't out there in canoes. They're just out there hanging out, like, you know, at Waveland and trying to catch a ball at Fenway. Just have a huge green monster, call it the blue monster, in right field. And people can walk up there, and then you're hitting it on to Oak. They should build a factory just for Camden Yards.
I hope people are in canoes on Oak Street. Just in their canoes, paddling on the sidewalk.
With wheels underneath it. A canoe with wheels and not floating. Or create a moat. There you go. Create a moat and a walking bridge that, you know, you got to have tickets to get over the moat. Sharks in there and piranhas and eels and leeches and stuff. You can't just swim across the moat. And therefore, you can have a canoe. There, I love the people that are putting the polo grounds downtown. Just having a horseshoe stadium. It's like, right field down the line in right field is going to be 150. Down the line in right field, and it's just going to be a triangle. It's going to be like an over-exaggerated Fenway where the triangle goes to center field, and it just runs along the path of Oak. I mean, because again, the stands are on the east side of Oak in the rendering. You know, if you go to, I'll probably do this before they break ground, go to a 16th and McGee, where it sort of meets, where that sort of the northeast part of that church parking lot, that's where home plate's going to be. You know, so go there, take some pictures, and then you'll be like, oh, before and after. Here's home plate, and now I can't stand on home plate, but that's where right around there is going to be. You know, it doesn't have to be exact. Of course, that's where it was going to be. I don't know. Where is it going to be now? Because apparently Oak Street is going to be a vital vein in the north-south, you know, connection of the Crossroads and north of the
artery.
South Loop. The artery. Thank you. What did I say? A vein?
It's okay.
Yeah, it's not just there. Locust is a vein.
Yeah, there you go.
This is an artery, damn it. McGee is just being closed up. That's just tying it off.
Side note, it's actually a great way to describe major and minor streets. I did like that.
No, I loved it, actually. I just got it wrong. It's an artery is Oak. And I just like where I lived before I moved to Louisville, where I live downtown is roughly the entrance of what would be, you know, directly from first base south. So if you go from the first base bag south, it's the buildings that are right across the street from 17th Street. So in the renderings, there are buildings right across the street from 17th Street that are still there. That's where I lived, right there. That would have been great. Parking would have been tough on game days for me there.
Ding, ding.
But, boy, still live there. Be great. Imagine the property value for, oh, the landlord, damn it. Not for me. I don't know. Are they still going to have places to live there? I don't know. There's a lot of displacement going on. But I just, the design plan won't change. I bet it will. I'll take the over on yes or no on that one. John Sherman was then asked about the impact on the businesses on the east side of Oak Street. If now Oak is open and, you know, you had the renderings that went all the way to Locust. So what about the businesses now on the east side of Oak?
There'll be a discussion on the other side of April 2nd about that whole development. And basically, what we said today is that we will keep Oak Street open. There'll be a series of discussions with the city council, and the businesses in the area as to how that will play out, you know, after April 2nd.
We'll get to it. We'll figure it out. It's a lot of it. We'll get around to it after April 2nd. You guys vote for this. We got it.
Then you get to see what's in the,
yeah,
the bill.
You guys vote for this. We got it. We'll see. Here's John Sherman on the latest on the entertainment district with the Crossroads location.
You know, I don't think it changes. You know, a lot of that'll be discussed after April 2nd, you know, with the city and the neighborhood. You know, we're going to have, when people say entertainment, I think that district will be light on entertainment. You know, Power and Light's right north of us there. I think that the entertainment component, you know, it's going to organically happen around the stadium. When I talk to the people in the Crossroads, there's some breweries and there's some places, you know, just south of the stadium, south of the stadium, which will become, I think their businesses will boom. And they'll be part of that neighborhood. Like, I'm not saying it's like the Cubby Bear or Murphy's Bleachers in Wrigley, but, you know, I think there'll be an organic entertainment district that will evolve, and then we'll certainly we'll be focused on certainly, you know, a hotel, residential, that type of thing in conjunction with the stadium.
We still anticipate $1 billion private investment in that area.
We do. We think there'll be $1 billion investment, I would say minimum, and we'll continue as time goes on. We'll continue to want to acquire around the ballpark, like you see in a lot of areas, and I would think it would happen in, you know, more than one phase.
To be clear, so you're still saying your hotel and offices would be there. They just would be on the other side of Oak, and Oak would stay open? Oak would stay open. So home runs into the street like that? I mean, is that kind of the deal? Or would you have a...
Hadn't really thought about the trajectory to get one over there, but yeah, I guess so. It might break a window in the hotel. I don't know. I mean, you know, the idea would be to have a hotel where... next to the stadium, almost part of the stadium, and there'd be a walkway that where, you know, people that were in the hotel either staying there or eating or could walk a crossway onto the concourse of the stadium.
Yeah, if there's a hotel just on the other side of Oak Street, that would be where the stands are currently in the renderings. So I haven't really thought about the trajectory to get it to Oak Street. Yeah, it's called a can of corn to right field. That's the trajectory to get it to Oak Street. It's called Renfro doesn't even have to move. There's a drive into right field. Renfro camps under it and out number one. There's a drive into right field. Pops up Renfro and gone. Sorry. Drive into right field. Pasquantino really got a hold of this one and it is gone. 225 right field. Massive shot by Vinny Pasquantino. Hits a pop-up. That lands on the west side of Oak.
It's like if Pesky's pole was the entire right field, basically.
I'm fascinated. Honestly, like, I'm having fun with it, but it could actually be kind of cool. Like, it could be
right.
a part of the ballpark, like a dimension of the ballpark.
The
like
Astros had a light post in center field, so who's to say we can't have Oak Street?
Until they were like, maybe we take the flagpole out.
Maybe. Just maybe.
We don't do that, yeah. You know? Old Tiger Stadium had the overhang in the upper deck where it was going to come down in play, but all of a sudden it's a home run because the overhead caught it, right? It could be a really cool dimension in right field. Like I said, like San Francisco... You know, you have that huge wall out there, and then you hit it into the bay. It's not, water, but, you got Waveland, and you got some cool stuff like that. And if the hotels are on the opposite side of Oak, like, again, the east side of Oak would just be a regular home run into right field.
Right. And I made a joke about Fenway. I mean, Yankee Stadium is damn near that. I mean, it's like a 300-foot.
Yankee Stadium is a bigger Little League stadium.
Right field,
Yankee Stadium is where I think they're going to hold a Little League World Series moving forward.
Right.
Ping! And gun, Johnny.
Again.
And gun, Jackson. And gun, Noah.
They'll be using wood bats going forward if that was the case.
And gun, Aiden. Just going to pick up names from my son's baseball team. It's the regular names. And gun, Everett. We need to take these Little League ballparks and bring those fences into right field with him being a lefty. Let's do it. Hey, you know what? Could be the house that Vinny Pasquantino built.
Yeah.
The house that Vinny built. 225 right field. Go ahead, Vinny. Go ahead and put that out there. Therefore, you get all lefties. Get Cole Reagans out there. Get those lefties.
Yep.
Make everybody go to the 405 to left field. Bobby Witt's like, really? 405 down the line left field? Are you kidding me? Well, we actually wanted to hit T-Mobile. We wanted it to the wall wanted to rub right up against T-Mobile. Okay, we're going to go across the South Loop. It's closed out down anyway, or it's we got the top on it. All right, so we'll go right across the South Loop. And if you get a hold of this one, Bobby. You're going to earn it.
Breaking some windows, yeah.
Yep, 475 to left field. But 220 down the right field line. This is going to be fun. It's going to be fun. It's just going to be a rectangle, just in the outfield. All right, so we'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll still continue to try to figure out how the dimensions would work opening up Oak Street. More Zone next. All right, wrapping up this hour, we got Sports and Leisure coming up at 1 o'clock. Presented by Johnny's Tavern. On the other side of the break, we will hear from J.J. Piccolo, Royals general manager. He has his press conference. Matt Quatrero pregame for opening day. We'll hear from M.J. Melendez, locker room, the clubhouse open. So hearing from some of the players as well, getting ready to go out there in game number one in what is the biggest opening day for this young group of players. Outside of those that may have made the opening day roster, like opening day last year for Vinny Pasquantino, the biggest opening day of his career, because he was not on the opening day roster in 2022. So there is something different about being on that roster on actual opening day. But the biggest one of these guys' careers, this younger group, because it's like the SEC. It just means more now. It means something. Let's hope in August it's meaning something.